Everybody knows the bill won't come. Another won't come. Won't come. Another won't come.
Maybe a lot of our listeners don't know your band. How would you describe the Yawpers?
The Yawpers are an incredibly aggressive, visceral Americana band, to be really layman about it. And blues rock and roll is kind of another attempt. It's really, you know, our live show is just such a different beast than even what we do on the record. So I would say check out our music. It is going to be a more unhinged version of that. You know, we come up there and play.
So the live show is always more unhinged than the recorded?
Yeah, definitely. You know, we take things a little bit quicker, and, you know, there's a certain energy, you know, being in front of an audience versus, you know, being in a studio. And while we do record live, you know, they're two different things, two different worlds. And, yeah, we like to get wild.
Well, yes, loud and aggressive certainly describe you, but you get all that sound from a drum set and two plugged-in acoustic guitars most of the time, don't you?
We do. Jesse has a few tricks up his sleeve to get some really serious tone out of his rig, which I think gives us like a very sonically aggressive sound. And additionally, like, you know, a big part of what makes us work is our arrangements and how things are played. And, you know, to some degree, it's very calculated. You know, Jesse's like comping bass licks and playing rhythm guitar at the same time. And, you know, Nate's holding down rhythm. And, you know, the way we build our drum parts, you know, try to complement all of those different pieces of the puzzle, I guess.
Uh-huh.
And to create a big, massive sound out of very little.
I watched several videos, though, where Jesse picks up the electric guitar and does some really nice slide work.
Yeah, yeah. You know, that's something that we are integrating more and more into the set, especially with the new record. He plays mostly electric guitar. You know, he's always experimenting around with tone and, you know, just whatever, I guess, inspires him in the moment.
And you mentioned Nate playing the rhythm guitar, and, you know, it strikes me that he couldn't get the same propulsive rhythm guitar on an electric rhythm guitar than he can on that acoustic. I mean, he is furiously sawing at that thing. It's percussive,
yeah,
in its own right.
We've played shows together where he's broken almost all the strings on the guitar in the first two songs, and that is not an exaggeration. So it's he's pounding, and, you know, the whole concept behind the acoustic guitars is, you know, they generally have a lot more body and, you know, a wider range of tone than most electric guitars, so you can get a deeper low end and punch and some boominess out of it that maybe you can't get if Nate was just playing an electric guitar. So that helps too.
Well, somewhere down the road, you're probably going to want to do a quieter album, and maybe that's when you get a lot of tasty little electric guitar fills from everybody.
Yeah, you know, I think American Man has quiet moments. The new record definitely does, which, to me, in my opinion, it's kind of a nod to some of the stuff that Jesse and Nate have done in the past. You know, Savage Blue, EP, stuff that was done before I was in the band. So there is, you know, there are always peaks and valleys. You know, we try to, you know, on record, we try to create something that's incredibly dynamic, and we try to do that live. But, you know, again, the live thing is just a whirlwind.
Well, a lot of that dynamism you mentioned, I think, comes from Nate's singing. It's very dynamic. I mean, it's slow, it's fast. He's got that rock and roll stutter, that kind of hillbilly hiccup thing going, too.
Yeah, yeah. It's the guttural, like the Elvis Presley, like the old 50s singers kind of,
yeah,
style. He is very versatile. I think he enjoys screaming a lot, and he has a great scream, but, you know, he also does have a very pretty voice, and we, Jesse and I, try to encourage him to showcase that more often than not, you know. And he does that again on the new record a lot, which is pretty awesome. But I would expect to hear a lot of screaming. scream at Jesse and I, probably scream a lot at the audience. That's just a part of the shtick.
Uh-huh. Oh, is it just a shtick? No, it's more than a shtick.
No. It's okay.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the new one. I think it's called Boy in a Well, right?
Yes.
And it's on Bloodshot, just like your last one?
Yep. And that comes out August 18th. It was co-produced by a friend of ours, Tommy Stinson, of The Replacements.
Yeah.
And we recorded the record in Chicago, which was a wonderful experience for us. We found a studio we just fell in love with, and you know, it's a really cool sounding record. You know, all of it was recorded through gear that, you know, was manufactured in the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s. It's a throwback, and our recording techniques were a little bit different this time around, which again contributes to, I think, a cool sonic landscape for the album. And, you know, there's definitely some raucous stuff on there, but there are a few really pretty songs. Nate's going to hate the way I describe that. Pretty songs that Nate wrote, you know, like a ballad-esque. So, yeah, it's cool. It's a far-out concept. It's concept record.
What's the concept?
Takes place in post-World War I France. And, you know, Nate did a wonderful job tying this absurd, unbelievable story together with really well thought out and delivered lyrics.
Huh. That's interesting. And
I know that was an earful.
Well, it's funny because I spent some time listening to the old one, American Man, the old one,
sure.
2015, and then I see they have a new one coming. So I was thinking, well, I can't really talk about the new one because I haven't heard it, although I did find the first single, I guess, probably on the Bloodshot website, Mon Dieu.
Yep, Mon Dieu.
Yeah. Talk about that song.
That was a really cool song. I think that song captured what we were really trying to get after with the new record and trying to progress the sound away from just this Americana rock and roll stuff towards a more rockabilly, psychobilly-inspired sound. Nate and I got really deep into a band called The Cramps. I want to say about a year and a half ago when we were on a Super Suckers tour. We both just started listening to those records and we're like, okay, we want the next record to sound like that. You know, whatever they're doing, whatever vibe and energy and magic that they created, we try to recreate. And so that song was actually mostly recorded about a year and a month ago in Chicago when we were doing demos. And we kept the original instrumental tracks, which we all did live. And, you know, once Nate penned lyrics, we just overdub the lyrics, you know, in September when we tracked the record. And that to me is one of the coolest sonic or sounding records or recordings. We only used one drum mic on that, which I thought was really cool to capture all that sound. And
Where did you place a drum mic if you're only using one?
It was placed, I want to say, maybe 2 or 3 feet, probably rack tom height, distance away from the drum set.
Uh-huh.
I can't remember if he used a kick drum mic on that. I really can't. But, you know, I tried to adjust my playing and not crash on my crash cymbals too hard, because every time I would do that, it would just, like, override everything else. You can't hear it. So it was cool as a performer to have to kind of augment your parts to kind of capture a different sound.
So it wasn't as, how do I say this? You lightened up a little bit, it sounds like.
I tried to. Okay. I definitely did. Uh-huh. You know, that's another thing that we, at least Jesse and I, definitely tried to approach with the new record, is how to be intense without always being loud. I don't know if I'm giving away too many of our secrets already before anyone hears the record, but that was something that was kind of important to us. Yeah, I don't know.
So
I think
now,
every band, go on.
I was going to say, do you road test new songs before you put them on an album? Is that how it works for you guys?
We didn't really have that luxury. We started writing the record a little over a year ago, and it was in between touring. We would just hunker down at our rehearsal space and shed as much as we could. You know, Nate came to the table with a few songs already written that we kind of rearranged for our instruments. And we then just wrote them from scratch. And I don't think we started playing the new material until like October or November, when we were just kind of finishing up the year and a half or whatever of touring. And we did, we didn't get the time to do that. In fact, we were rushing to get all the songs finished before we got to Chicago. So we were kind of even just writing on the fly. We didn't have the luxury. We were really shooting to get into the studio and have the record out by early spring, but we just had some logistical issues with our comic book that we are pairing with the record. So we wound up pushing it back a little bit further. We've been playing some of the stuff live, and I'm sure we'll play a few of the songs when we come up to Carbondale.
Wow, did you say comic book that you're releasing with the record?
Exactly. A good friend of ours, J.D. Wilkes from the legendary Shack Shakers, he's a brilliant artist, and he writes comic books and novels. I mean, he's a prolific guy. We fell in love with his artwork when we toured with them last January, and Nate really wanted to do something special and get the, get an illustrated version of the story to tie everything together. So we commissioned JD, and he did a wonderful job. And we just, have been figuring out how to print it properly with most integrity. So that kind of held up some of the record stuff.
Oh, I see. Now, so if somebody buys your new CD, they get the comic book with it? Is that how it's going to work?
I believe Bloodshot's doing, with a pre-sale, you get, like, if you pre-order the record, you'll get a comic book with it. It's something we intend to pair as a value-added item with the record. It's just, I think it's so cool. We all do, obviously.
Yeah. Well, somehow a comic book works with what you do. That makes perfect sense to me.
Certainly with this record, it definitely does. Huh. Once you see the comic book, you'll totally get it. And it totally sets the stage for the story and everything else, and the music and the lyrics.
Noah, it's not too often I talk with the drummer in the band, so let me ask you a few
Sure.
questions about your drums. First of all, there's no bass player in your band, so does
Yep.
that give you more freedom, or does it make it harder for you? Talk about that a little bit.
It's been so long since I've played with a bass player in a band. I'm trying to remember what it was like in order to give you a well-rounded answer. We've made it work. When I came into the band, I was learning, all the parts that they had previously and learning how to think like a Yawper's drummer and how they apply the drum set to their music. So I feel like that's kind of ingrained in my style to a degree. I can't say it makes it harder. Jesse and I rehearse often together, and he has bass sensibilities. He actually played bass in a band called Eagle Versus Id with Nate before the Yawper started. And so, like, he kind of holds it down. Jesse is a bass player, also with an acoustic guitar on. What it really changes is where we put the parts. We try to always fill the low frequencies out on the toms, and that's something that's very intentional. I would say definitely... challenges us a little bit with arranging, but I'm always looking for a new way to play the instrument, so it's perfect for me and for what we do.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned the Taz because of that great video of your live at KEXP performance. Where you just are wailing back there on the drums. And I noticed that a lot of it is on the toms, and I wondered if that's intended. And what you just said, yes, it is.
Exactly. You know, with the proper mix and the proper PA, you know, those frequencies are coming through and really singing. And that gives the music a lot more body and fullness that you really lack. You know, without having a bass player.
Uh-huh.
And I think as a drummer, and this is a generalization, but one that I'm willing to make, you know, I hit hard because I feel like I'm always competing with amps. You know, Jesse's rig is like out of control. I'm like, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I hope they can hear me, you know, even though my drums are mic'd. But I feel like that's something that's always like in the back of a drummer's mind is you're competing with all the electronics. I'm working on that, though. I'm trying to be a little bit more in control.
Well, you know, it's really dynamic, not just the tom playing, but the cymbals. And I noticed in that KEXP video how often your cymbal work matches the voice of Nate singing.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I definitely go for that. You know, I feel like I've been asked a couple times to maybe tone back some of the things I do on the cymbals via Jesse and Nate, but I try to tastefully embellish anything that they do and kind of make it musical or add that, you know, musicality to it. Because I think that we kind of have two sides to us, like, you know, the visceral, unhinged thrashing side and then like a very musical side, so it's like always trying to balance the two. When do I thrash with no mercy and when do I delicately hit the bell of the cymbal, you know? So I'm always trying to think of those two things, and they are very different.
Yeah, well, I, you know, it's not just the music, that it's also the lyrics that are sort of a counterweight to the thrashing part of things.
Yeah, definitely. I will speak on Nate's behalf. I think he really thinks about that. You know, writing is his craft. I can't think of another band I've played in where the lyrics are so integral and such a strong foundation to everything else that goes around in the music and goes on in the band musically. That alone separates us, I think, from many of the artists that you know, we know. And that isn't meant to sound like condescending or anything. That's just like what Nate does. And I never really realized it until we were doing American Man and like I saw his process of writing. And he did the same thing on this record. And his father and him actually collaborate often and write together. And it's a duty. It's a job. It's very thought out and thoughtful. It's amazing. When Nate initially pitched this idea for the record and this concept, it seemed so bizarre. I was like, okay, that sounds brilliant. We'll sell millions of records. But the craft of his writing tied everything together so masterfully that it's actually incredible. And I feel like I can speak objectively about that, even though I'm in the band. I would urge everyone, if you pick up the new record or even if you listen to American Man, to really dig in, because, you know, he spends a lot of time working on that stuff. And you know, it's important to what we do.
Well, according to your website and your Facebook page, it looks like you guys are sort of taking a little bit of a break before the Mountain Fair gig. It looks like August and September are pretty full, but I don't see too many.
Yeah.
Gigs
we,
right
we've
now.
We've been laying low. Uh-huh. As per advisement on our management's behalf, timing has just been weird. We kind of missed a lot of the summer stuff. We didn't really want to tour on American Man anymore because we have the new record coming out. So we've taken the summer to enjoy being home and in one place and to, you know, rehearse material, continue writing, and then we're gonna hit it pretty hard come August and after Labor Day in September.
So this Carbondale Mountain Fair gig is the first one of the tour, is that right?
Yep. So that's nice. Is that the 29th, I believe?
Yeah, it's right around there. Yep.
Yeah, I mean, tell me about Carbondale, Luke. What do we need to do when we're up there?
Well, you have to jump in the river.
Done.
You have to climb a mountain.
Easy. No problem.
Okay.
How many 14ers are up there?
Well, up around Aspen, there's a bunch. The one big mountain that dominates everything down here around Carbondale isn't even 13,000 foot, but it's worth getting to the top of because it sort of stands alone, you know, and you get the whole picture. It's great. It's called Mount Sopris, and you'll love it. It's gorgeous.
Yeah, we'll do that before we drink.
And then I recommend the various hot springs around.
Yeah, I've never been to the hot springs there. I think the only springs I've been to were in Steamboat. Strawberry Springs, I think.
Strawberry, nice.
Yeah, but that might all have to change in a few weeks.
Yeah, well, you know, there's one right on the Crystal River outside of Carbondale. It's sort of a wild one. It's undeveloped. And then, of course, there's the big pool down in Glenwood Springs. And either one of them is good. And actually, by the time Mountain Fair comes around, the Crystal River will be low enough where you can soak in the hot spring.
I love that. That sounds wonderful.
Yeah. So where do you see the Yoppers going, Noah Schomburg? Where would you like to go?
Like in the world?
In the music industry. Are you happy with where you're at? Do you want to go further? What's going on with that?
I am very happy with where we're at. I think everyone always wants to go further. You know, we don't want to ever be sedentary or happy with you know what we have. We always want to be pushing ourselves to be a better and a little bit bigger band. You know, a goal of ours is to get over to Europe this year. We've been to Canada a bunch last year. And, you know, just continue being out on the road touring and making great music. As long as people are excited about it and receptive, then, you know, we're just going to keep trucking along.
Noah Schomburg, drummer for the Yoppers, thanks for joining Express Yourself today.
Thank you, Luke. I appreciate it, man.